Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. My name is Mark Ivano with the LibertyConservative.com. I'm here with Mr. Tom Tancredo, who is a former congressman and is running for the second time as a candidate for the governor of Colorado. He has received some unfair coverage from the mainstream media, as is typical, but here at the Liberty Conservative, we will not only give him fair coverage, we will more importantly give him honest coverage. So with that said, thank you for joining us, Mr. Tancredo.
Oh, man, under those conditions, it's a pleasure.
Which is all ours. For my first question, you have been particularly strong on the issue of immigration. As governor, will you do your best to prevent Syrian refugees from being resettled in Colorado?
Yeah, I certainly will. And I will be especially upset if we don't actually improve the whole immigration policy of the United States and truly reform it. The only immigration that should be coming into this country are those folks who, number one, certainly have been vetted, but number two, really and truly want to be Americans and assimilate into an American culture. I know that's, in and of itself, it's controversial. The idea of having an American culture is controversial. But I believe one exists, and I believe it's being eroded, and so I think that, and I think purposely so, through the immigration process. We should be bringing people into this country who want to come here, become Americans, and who contribute to this nation. That is to say, our policy should be based on what's good for America. And I mean, that's a sane and common sense policy that most countries in the world, until very recently anyway, actually employed. So it's not just Syrian refugees, certainly. It's a whole huge issue of immigration reform, and I do mean true reform.
Right. Seems like it's been a long time coming, and it's getting more and more support. For my next question, Aurora, Denver, and Boulder have all at times been described as sanctuary cities.
Right.
What would you do to ensure state and local compliance with federal immigration law?
Well, there are relatively few things that a governor can do, but some revolve around the ability to have what's called line item veto, and the ability to, through the various agencies that operate at the state level, and the people that you appoint to them, there can be penalties applied to those cities through that process, to grants that are not approved and or revoked. It's not huge, I assure you. I mean, I can't say that any city would go, oh, gosh, if they're going to take away my XYZ grant, I better go ahead and start cooperating with ICE. But I would do what I can there. And then, of course, the real power of the office of governor is the bully pulpit that it provides you. And so I would, number one, encourage the legislature to do something much more significant with regard to sanctuary cities. And that means this. I believe that any politician, any elected official, I should say, that actually operates a sanctuary city, has voted for it, condones it, and encourages it, should be held personally liable for any kind of damage that's done as a result of that. For instance, you call yourself a sanctuary city, you have somebody that has come into your city, has come in contact with the local police or even, of course, county or state police.
Right.
And they have not been reported to ICE, or their detainer has been denied or whatever. And then that person commits a crime, that murder, rape, robbery, some other heinous crime that really does damage somebody else, that the survivors, the family of the people being killed, or the individual victims themselves of other crimes, should have the ability to hold those those elected officials personally liable, financially liable. And I would certainly support that. Let me just point out something.
Sure.
If you take the issue of immigration out, take the word immigration out of it, the whole thing with sanctuary cities, because that's what makes it, you know, much more difficult to actually address, because there's so much emotion attached to it and so much politics attached to it. But if you take that out of there, and you have, let's say you have a mayor who believes that there are a whole bunch of people in prisons all over the United States who are unjustly imprisoned for whatever, you know, whatever reason that person, that mayor thinks so.
Right.
And then says, if anybody escapes from a prison anywhere in this country, they can come here to my city and we won't report it. We will, I mean, if they come in contact with us, we won't report it to anybody else. You'll be given sanctuary. And then somebody does escape, come to that city and kill somebody. Why wouldn't the mayor of that city or the city council that supported it, why wouldn't they be liable? They're culpable. They are part and parcel of the problem. And so that's the way to think about it. It's the only thing different about what we're talking about is it's dealing with immigration, illegal immigration. And so all the other factors start playing in. Oh, my God, you don't, can't send these people. But, oh, they're only trying to do the job that no American will do and all that stuff. But in reality, of course, it's all politics. And I would absolutely push for the kind of bill I just described. And if the legislature did not approve it, I would then work to put it on the ballot here in Colorado.
Right. Yeah, it's funny how that works. Remove the word immigration, and it's outrageous. Put the word immigration in there, and we need to do it.
Perfect. Exactly. I mean, and that's the only way you can really explain it to people, because otherwise they stop short and go, oh, no, my goodness, that's so harsh. But
right,
it's really
right.
Not.
Absolutely. Well, moving on to something that used to be far more controversial, but is now also gaining a lot of momentum. You are well known as a Republican advocate for marijuana legalization. Mm-hmm. We at the Liberty Conservative also share that goal. What would you do to help protect the Colorado's legal marijuana industry?
Well, there are a couple of things. First of all, we have to make sure that the taxing structure here is appropriate, and that we don't look at this as, you know, the golden egg, the egg laid by the golden goose eggies, and try to simply fund everything imaginable from marijuana taxes. I mean, I know that's something that many of my former colleagues in the state legislature look at with greedy eyes. You know, there's a big pot of money there, and I want some of it for this or that or the other. Well, you can destroy the industry. You can certainly do something that ruins one of the, I guess, reasons why people vote for it, and that is to reduce the activity and reliance on the cartels and that sort of thing, to stop sending money there. Well, if you just, I mean, there's a way, you know, you can get greedy enough to tax the industry almost out of existence, and certainly put money right back into the hands of the cartels, because people go that way because it's cheaper. The other thing, we have to work with Congress to get them to establish a financial system that allows legal marijuana, that industry, the ability to bank and, you know, put their money away. And it also gives the government a much better way of keeping track of the money that is actually coming from the industry. Right now, of course, it's almost impossible, because the federal government still classifies marijuana as a drug that is, you know, it's against the law federally. And so no bank wants to get involved with it for fear being fined and all kinds of things should the political climate change. But those two things are extremely important. And the other is to make sure that the industry itself is doing everything possible to live up to the expectations that they established when the initiative was passed. That is to say, work hard to make sure that, people, children and the young adults are not below 18, are not getting this. And even if they're 18, that they're not using the marijuana medical card as a way of getting what they want for even cheaper, because it's not taxed the same way. But follow the rules. Make sure that the general public understands you're doing that. And then the other kinds of things are in the area of taxation and, of course, banking. But I, as I've told my conservative friends over and over again, and this is the reason I lost the last gubernatorial primary I was in, Republican primary, is because the Republicans really did come out in force against me because of my support. And, you know, I just kept reminding them that, first of all, I'm telling you the truth, I've never taken it. I've never used it. Never actually felt the need or whatever, but I couldn't care less if you did. You know, if you're an adult and the things that you put into your body that you ingest are, that's simply your business. It is not the government's. And I can say, don't do it. It's a bad idea. Don't drink so much. Don't drink so much 100 proof whiskey or vodka or something. I mean, it's probably not good for you, but, you know, it's not my position to tell you what you can put into your body as an adult. And so, because if you do that, believe me, then you have absolutely no right. If you agree with that as a so-called conservative, you have no right to get mad at the government if they tell you you can't own a gun or 100 other things that you say as a conservative. Baloney, it's my right. I didn't hurt anybody with my, you know, I hate the word gun violence. There's no such thing, right? Gun is an inanimate object. And it cannot commit violence. Only people can. Same thing with drugs, you know. It is not the fault of the product that people do bad things with it. And we have to make that clear as much as possible to our conservative friends, because otherwise they're faux conservatives as far as I'm concerned. Part of being a conservative is saying, I don't want the government in my life. And this is certainly, I mean, as long as I'm not hurting anybody else, what role does the government have to play? It's very, very, very limited.
Right. It seems to me like if you're fine with alcohol, you should be fine with marijuana, whether or not you use it. I think what you said would definitely anyone who supports legal marijuana should be able to get behind that.
Well, I would think that it's funny. The legal marijuana, I mean, the folks here in the industry did not support my effort as governor, did not and have not to this point in time supported it in this race. And they keep saying, well, but you don't use it, so we don't trust you. I said, well, you know, that's pretty silly, but it's nonetheless the case. They've not supported me. And so I don't do this for support of the industry. I mean, I'd like it. I wish they would. I would certainly accept their support. But they've chosen, I think that my position on immigration and other things makes me too conservative for them. And so it's a funny kind of juxtaposition here of complaints against me, but there it is.
All right. Well, moving on to a different topic, the federal government currently owns 36% of the land in Colorado. Yeah. Would you push to have at least some of that land transferred from the federal government to the state government?
Absolutely. I worked with there's an organization out of Utah that has been pushing this idea for a long time, and I have supported their efforts and would continue to do so. The minute you say this, of course, you are accused of wanting to sell off, you know, Rocky Mountain National Park, and Yellowstone and all that stuff.
Right,
but,
yeah.
But in reality, the state can manage the forests of the state, inside the state, better, I think, than the federal government has been able to manage them or mismanage them. And I would say this, at least you couldn't do worse. I mean, you look at the state of the the health of the forests in America. And honestly, who can say that they have been husbanded correctly and in a healthy way? They are not healthy. And these massive fires, especially these ones that explode and cannot be controlled and burn hundreds of thousands of acres, are all because the forests have not been properly managed. So I'm absolutely in favor of taking it back.
But you think if the local government can maintain some parks, they can certainly maintain a quote national park within their land.
For sure. That is for sure. And we know how. I mean, it can happen. We have some good examples around the country, and certainly even in the United, even in within the state of Colorado, we have good examples. They're usually parcels of land that are privately owned. You know, people who own their own land have a much, I guess, bigger interest or greater interest in keeping it safe, keeping it healthy, and clearing when they need to, and control burn when they need to. All of these things are done because, of course, people have a strong interest in maintaining the health of the property they own. Well, we have to infuse that attitude into the government. Not easy, but it would be an admirable goal.
Right. We can only hope. Moving on to the next question, what specific areas of wasteful spending would you try to cut if elected governor?
Well, in Colorado, we have something called the Tabor Amendment, which you've had for a long time. It prevents the state from actually raising taxes without a vote of the people. And they try over and over to get around it. But one of the ways they've done it in the past is to use what they call fees instead of calling it a tax. Hmm. And so what they've done is impose all kinds of fees on things like hospital provider fee. That's one that comes to mind because taxes every single bed in every single hospital, of course, paid for by people whose medical bills go up, and then they take that money and add it to the general fund coffer. Well, I will try my best. If it comes to me as a separate bill, I would veto that because it's a way of escaping the scrutiny of the general public on the actual dollars that you are taking away from them. And so the other thing that a lot of that money goes to is to expanding Medicaid. And to a large extent, that is, I think, a waste because they just keep increasing the percentage of income that would let you decreasing, I guess I better say, the percentage of income that actually puts you into the category.
Okay, well, sorry to interrupt. That's actually my follow-up question is, would you seek to roll back Medicaid expansion in Colorado?
Yes, absolutely. I believe that is a big, huge waste of money. And again, not easy to do. None of these things are easy. Once you establish a program like that, you find that a constituency develops overnight, of course, and is very difficult to roll back. But once again, who would have thought that Donald Trump would be president? And who would think, even after he becomes president, he would actually be able to roll back all of the regulations that he has so far been successful in rolling back? I mean, it's right. Incredible to me. Absolutely amazing. I never thought in my life
I would ever see a time when we could not just hold back the tide. Because that really, I must tell you, for the longest time, I thought that was all we could do. Elect Republicans, elect conservatives, because they will stop the forward movement toward more liberal America.
Mm-hmm.
But I never thought I'd actually really to see the day when we weren't just stopping them. We're actually rolling back. And that is why he is so hated, because he is doing that. Well, I imagine that I will face the same thing in opposition, but I hope I'm as successful as he is in doing.
Oh, yeah. We hope so as well. Moving on to Second Amendment rights. Neighboring Wyoming, Arizona, and Kansas have all adopted constitutional carry laws. Would you seek to allow Colorado residents to exercise their Second Amendment rights without a permit?
Absolutely. And also, beyond that, certainly I want reciprocity. Like I started out telling you, you know, it just annoys the heck out of me that we have a tendency to misplace our concerns about these acts that occur, and of course the gun deaths that may be preventable and all that sort of thing. We have a tendency immediately to blame an inanimate object, the gun, when of course it has nothing to do with it. And so my hope would be that we could establish the fact that it's something that I'm absolutely convinced of, that a better armed society is a safer society. And again, this is empirically provable. It's not just an assumption. And we've seen it happen more and more and more, you know. If the more people that own firearms and know how to use them has a direct and, I think, beneficial impact on things like crime rates throughout the system.
Right. One has to only look as far as Chicago or Baltimore to see that. Okay, for sure. Now, for the next question, it's an issue that's close to me because I graduated a few years ago from Texas State University. I'm now in law school. And in previous op-eds, you've criticized the anti-American and anti-Constitution attitudes on college campuses. What would you do to help protect free speech at public colleges in Colorado?
Well, the legislature actually did take some action in that last year and passed something that made it more difficult for colleges to establish, you know, a no speech zone, if you will, certainly no conservative speech zone.
Right.
And so we have taken a whack at that. One of the things that I would really like to do is to say that before you get to college, I would like every single kid graduating from a high school in this state to be able to pass a civics literacy test. And I don't mind. In fact, I suggest that it should be the same test we give immigrants. Because if we expect immigrants to know something about this country beyond its location on a map, and who come here from different, all over the world, different culture, different background, languages, all the rest. But, you know, why is it so hard to assume that a person growing up here, living here, born here, should not have to know the same thing? And I guarantee you that if we gave the same test that we give immigrants, and believe me, it is not a tough test, okay? I've seen it. It's not bad at all. But I would guarantee you that 75% of the people in this country, adults and youngsters, could not pass it. I bet you anything.
Yeah, that's remarkable that you could take the SAT, get a high score on the SAT, fail a civics test miserably, and then get into a top college.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely true. And you know, that you'd still be relying on the teachers and the textbooks in those institutions, those high schools, to teach a true, you know, the history of the United States and its government. No matter what, if you had something that required the basics, that would be enough for me to just start out with. And I'll tell you, the bias, the animus against the country and throughout academia is so great, so intense that you do wonder how in the world we actually survive this as a republic and still keep producing people that will, you know, put their life on the line and in the military. And ah, gosh, it's so scary. But and I could tell you instance after instance of when I was in I was speaking to high school groups and the kinds of responses I got, it was just absolutely scary.
Right. Yeah, that's not remarkable to say the least. Moving on to the next question. Roy Moore's defeat earlier this month has left a lot of constitutionalists, conservatives, and libertarians discouraged about the prospects of an anti-establishment surge in 2018. Like Moore, you've been backed by Steve Bannon, which will inevitably lead to comparisons by your opponents. Mm-hmm. How do you and your campaign intend to learn from what happened in Alabama?
Well, that's an excellent question. And first, we have to really and truly find out what happened in Alabama. There's a lot of speculation, but not a lot of hard evidence of, beyond the fact that he lost. The trying to determine exactly what created that problem, when you look at the turnout model, for instance, you can see that what happened was very clear. About half of the Republicans voted, about 90% of the Democrats voted. So it was a turnout problem. Now, why didn't they turn out? That's, of course, the next question. But our task in this campaign would be to indeed make sure that we have in operation a turnout model that will overcome the kind of opposition that we know will exist. I'm no Roy Moore. I always say I'm willing to go on the box now. I'll take a lie detector test right now. Let's get it over with. Somebody might accuse me of, I will take a lie detector test this minute that says I've never had an affair. I've never cheated on my wife. I've never groped anyone. And so try to get that out of the way at the beginning. Maybe that's what we can do to deal with the Roy Moore situation.
Yeah.
And it's a turnout model is a deep thing.
That's true. Okay. Well, going back to your former run as governor, you ran as a candidate for the Constitution Party, achieving the party's best results with 36.4% of the vote. If you've been a Republican nominee in that race, there's a good chance you would have won had you been. What are your thoughts on third parties in America today, and how would you contrast your experiences in the Constitution Party versus in the Republican Party?
Well, this is a tough, not tough answer, it's kind of lengthy, but you have to understand what happened in that race. I was supporting the Republican candidates throughout the primary, two of them that I really believed were at least, okay, not fantastic. But then there was this third guy who was, he simply was there out of the blue, he stepped in, and frankly, it was because he needed a job. He had been out of work. He figured out that raising money as a politician and a candidate, he ended up stealing. I'll say it was. He put $90,000 from his own campaign. Hmm. This was the Republican nominee, right? Hmm. Took 90 grand from his own campaign and called it gas money. So he would have been indicted within about 10 minutes of being elected. So I ran. It was too late to run as a Republican, which is why the Constitution Party and I came together. And it was simply a marriage of convenience, totally. They needed to have somebody that would get them more votes than they've ever gotten before, and I needed access to the ballot. And they had it. We agreed to it. And so the hope was to make the third-party candidate, in this case, the Republican.
Right.
He was the third-party candidate, if you will. Because he ended up with 11% of the vote. If he had 1% less, Colorado would have been gone into minor party status here, which all kinds of things bad happen to you. And so what the hope was that once he saw that there was absolutely no chance in a million years that he could get elected, he would drop out. The Republican Party, by the end of the campaign, every single Republican was supporting me because they knew this guy was flawed is putting it mildly. And so that's how I ended up on the ballot. He did not get out because he was making money doing it, And so he didn't care that he was going to lose. He actually made more money running for governor than he had in the past 3 years of employment for him, whatever it was. So that was the – now – I'm all for third parties, and I, one of the things I learned in that election was that there is this crazy sort of second class status that you are put in as a third party. You can't raise money the same way. There are all kinds of restrictions. I never knew it. I had no idea because I'd never been in a third party. But if you think about it, I guess it's only logical because who makes the laws about third party? But the major party. And so usually they want to make it tough. But I'd get rid of those. I would make it as easy as possible for third parties to run. And third-party candidates, I have nothing against arguments being made in the public arena and having people. I've often thought that, frankly, even the parliamentary system in some ways is better than ours because it does give people the ability to have their voice heard, even if in a relatively small percentage of the population. I think that's important. One of the things we're seeing now in America is this incredible, horrible division. Mm-hmm. And I think that comes about as a result of so many people think that their voices are not heard, and they're not.
All right. Speaking of third parties, a lot of our audience are tremendous fans of Ron Paul. They really appreciate his ideas and what he's done. While in Congress, you were a member of Ron Paul's Liberty Caucus. How was your relationship with him, and how did Ron Paul influence your outlook on the issues, if at all?
Oh, it was great. And, yeah, there was a small group, Liberty Caucus. I wish it was bigger, but it actually was able to meet in his office. And there were probably more than maybe 10 people at the most I ever saw there. But of course, I was a strong advocate of many of his ideas. But where we did separate was on America's role in the world. I do think, and I did then, that we have a problem with something called radical Islam, or however you want to define that branch of the Islamic sect that has taken up the call to arms, so to speak.
Right.
And how to deal with that. The biggest mistake I ever made in Congress was voting to give President Bush the ability to, use force in Iraq. And I look back on it now and think how really bad a decision that was. Of course, it was based entirely on all the information that I had available, that we all had available, thinking that we were actually working on solid, truthful information, and we weren't. And so, but nonetheless, I do believe that there is a threat to the United States to Western civilization. That's where the threat is, not just the United States. And so how to deal with that, Ron and I may be on different, put positions there, but generally speaking, we saw eye to eye on almost everything else.
Right. I think seeing what's happening in Europe now, that issue is certainly getting momentum as well.
And immigration, of course, a big, big issue. And a lot of my libertarian friends don't like my position on immigration. They believe that the only thing that should determine the movement of people groups all over the world is a market. And I think that it's much more complex than that now. And so looking at Western Europe is a perfect example of what's happening to Western civilization. It is indeed crumbling right in front of us.
Right. I concur. And now moving on to my last question for you. What is your stance on enacting sound money legislation similar to the legislation that has been already passed in Arizona and Utah that would make gold and silver legal tender in Colorado?
Yeah, I see nothing wrong with it. I don't know that I spend a lot of time in pursuit of it. Mm-hmm. But should it be presented to me as a governor in the form of a bill, I'd sign it.
Okay. Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I'd like to leave the last word with you. How can our audience across the country learn more about your campaign and support you? And is there anything else you'd like to leave us with today?
Well, yeah, please understand that the Republican establishment is the biggest problem I have. And they don't like me. They do not like my position on immigration. And hence, they have done everything in the last two elections to stop me from being successful. They will try again, I'm sure. The only thing I will have to respond to them with is the truth. And the only way I can get that out is with money. I hate to say it. I wish there was another way. But the truth is it requires a financing of a campaign at a level that I have a hard time with. I always have the highest number of low donors, small donors, of anybody running, which is great. I love it to have so many people, but it's a very difficult task. And so please, if there's anybody out there that agrees with me and feels that it's important to show the flag here in Colorado for a good, solid, conservative / libertarian guy, go to TenCredo4Colorado. That's FOR. TenCredo4Colorado, and give us a hand.
All right. Well, thank you all for tuning in. Big thank you to you, Mr. Tom TenCredo. It's been a pleasure talking to you, wishing you all the best. And hopefully next time we talk to you, we can refer to you as Governor TenCredo. Thank you very much again. God bless you and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you and to all of your listeners. Bye-bye.
All right, thank you. Take care.